The very first sentence in the Buddha's first discourse, as it should, but the two extremes that should be avoided, his very last word was an imperative, achieve completion. Throughout his teaching career, he dealt in shoulds. In the old poems in the Sutta Nibbata, lots of exhortations about how a monk should behave like this, should not behave like that. And of course we've got the whole Dhamma Vinaya. The Vinaya is full of shoulds and should nots. When the Buddha taught the Dhamma, he didn't just give information. He aroused, encouraged, and urged listeners as well. I say all this because this is a feature of the Buddhist teachings that is often denied. The Buddhist teaching is simply to accept things as they are. We shouldn't try to impose any shoulds on anything. Just be with things as they are. Well, that phrase, knowledge and visions of things as they are, is actually a mistranslation. It's knowledge and vision of things as they have come to be. The reason you want to know how they've come to be is you want to understand the causal principle behind them. And then you use that causal principle. That's why when the Buddha gave his shortest description of his own awakening, it starts with the causal principle. When this is, that is. When this isn't, that isn't. From the rising of this comes the rising of that. From the cessation of this comes the cessation of that. As the Buddha explains it, that's a causal principle that allows for freedom of choice. And he wants you to exercise your freedom of choice to follow the path, to develop the path. Recently there was someone explaining the Buddha's recommendations for being content with your lodgings by saying that if you tell yourself, I have to be content, if you tell yourself, I have to be content, that's imposing ego on things. And it's a form of grasping. Because no matter what you become, it's all subject to being constant, stressful, not self. Instead, you should simply reflect. If you have some discontent, you don't feel bad about yourself. Just notice, this is what discontent is like this. I've never seen the Buddha give advice like that. And what this line of thought is doing is taking the three perceptions and turning them into a metaphysical teaching, the three characteristics, making that the basis of the Buddhist teachings. And then on top of that deeper basis, then you place the Four Noble Truths. And then you try to figure out the duties of the Four Noble Truths in line with the fact that everything's going to be in constant stressful, not self. And you pretty much deny the duties. Comprehension of suffering, somebody comes reflecting that suffering is like this, and so on down the line. Craving is like this. But the Buddha never saw things that way. For him, the Four Noble Truths were the basic teaching. And then the three perceptions found their duties within the duties of those Four Noble Truths. This is why in the first sermon he taught the Four Noble Truths and didn't teach the three perceptions until the second of his teachings. And in that first sermon, he thought that suffering is to be comprehended. What does comprehension mean? It means that you understand it to the point of having no more greed, aversion, and delusion around it. Craving, the second noble truth, is to be abandoned. How do you abandon things? Well, first you have to figure out where your craving is focused. Suppose you think you have a craving for a person. Was it really with the person? Or is it for your perception of that person? For your thought constructs around that person? the narratives you tell yourself. When you can really locate the craving, see where it really is focused, then you can see what's the allure of that focus. And then what are the drawbacks of the craving? You want to compare these two to the point where you have dispassion for it. That's a little more active than simply telling yourself craving is like this. You want to see very clearly the focus, where it arises, what is the origination, what inside you gives rise to it. How does it pass away? How does it come back again? When it comes back, what's the allure? The hard part often, though, is finding where the precise location is. You think you crave something, and actually there's something deeper, something more subtle. This is why you have to develop the path so you can see your own mind very clearly. I'm getting ahead of myself. The third noble truth is to be realized. Now do you realize it? You watch yourself as craving, it gets abandoned. You get to that point by developing the path. And when the Buddha says to be virtuous, he's not saying just think about what it's like to be not virtuous. When he's saying go do jhana, he's not saying go reflect on your minds that are not in jhana. Actually, no, you want to do these things. There are activities to be done. After all, the mind is an active entity. It's constantly shaping the present moment, and it needs instructions on how to do it well, because it's causing suffering by shaping the moment in a very ignorant way. And the Buddha is giving you examples, ideas, opening opportunities. You can do this, you can do that. These are things we wouldn't have thought of otherwise. That's what his imperatives are for, that's what his shoulds are for. Not as an imposition, but as opening opportunities. This is why the first teaching was the Four Noble Truths. Now within the Four Noble Truths and their duties, you apply the three perceptions of inconstancy, stress, not-self, as you try to comprehend your suffering and try to abandon the cause. The drawbacks of craving, and the fact that no matter where the craving leads you, it's going to be in constant stressful not self. The craving itself is in constant stressful not self. All the more reason you want to abandon it. Because the three characteristics, when the perceptions are turned into characteristics, have no imperatives. You can use them to justify any kind of behavior. Like the idea that eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. Or try to squeeze as much pleasure as you can out of things as they go running past. Or the idea that you shouldn't strive for anything, just be with things as they are. Because no matter what you strive for, it's all going to go away. This is one of the reasons why I told that group in Brazil, I'm putting together a curriculum for their children, it would start out with the three characteristics. He said, no. To have them all depressed and defeatist, you have to provide the context. What is the context? Well, what is the context of wisdom in general? What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? Well, when I do it, it will lead to my long-term harm and suffering. The wisdom there being that long-term happiness is possible, it's better than short-term, and it's going to depend on your actions. Your actions can make the difference between long-term happiness and long-term harm. That's wise. Just saying things are in constant stressful, not self, I'll just be with them and say that they're like this, that's not wise at all. So when the Buddha says to develop the path, you work at developing it, it's going to be worth it. And even though it involves some grasping, well, think of the image of the raft. You're on this side of the river, it's dangerous. On the other side of the river is safety. And the river itself is dangerous. So you have to be very careful about how you go across. There's no bridge across. There's no Nibbana yacht coming to pick you up. But you do have twigs and branches on the side of the river, which stands for the clinging aggregates, the things that you ordinarily cling to in a way that makes suffering. But you create them, you cut them, you bind them into a raft, and then you hold on as you make an effort with your arms and legs. In other words, you use the aggregates, form, feeling, perceptions, fabrications, consciousness, to create a path. Your practice of the precepts will involve these five aggregates. Your practice of concentration will involve them. Even discernment, the perceptions and thought constructs used for discernment, will involve the aggregates. You have to hold on. And if it involves a sense of self as you do this, well, the Buddha recommends that you have a good, healthy sense of self, that yes, you can do this, and two, you will benefit. And three, you can learn from your actions so you can perfect the path. Because there are things in the river that will wash you away if you don't hold on tight. And you do have to make an effort, and it's worth it. It'll get you to the other side. Once you've gotten to the other side, then you can let go of the raft with a sense of appreciation. And then you can go on your way. So remember, the Four Noble Truths come first. Their duties come first. The three perceptions are not three characteristics. The three perceptions are activities that you do. As with all perceptions, they don't tell you the totality of the reality. But we're not here to find ultimate reality. We're here to find the end of suffering. That's something else. But the three perceptions incline the mind in the right direction to develop dispassion, so you can let go when the time comes to let go. So that's how you use the Buddha's teachings. When he says you should do this, it's worth the effort to do it. When he says something, you should not do this, give it a try. Try not doing it. It's something you can do. You're already shaping your experience anyhow. You're already active and taking the raw material from your past karma and shaping it into your present moment experience. So take the Buddha's advice. This is how you do it well. His shoulds are not impositions. His shoulds are ways of opening opportunities. Regard them not as a burden, but as doors to the deathless.